Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Pets with Belle and Two, and we're putting it all in a podcast. Then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pods and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Parks and Recollection. I am one of your hosts, Jim O'Hare, better known as Gary, Larry, Jerry, Terry, and Barry from Johnny Karate. And sitting next to me, oh God, I always forget your name.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here with you every time. But
what is the name?
The name's Greg. We've worked on this before.
Yes, we have done this.
Yeah. I think contractually you're supposed to know that.
Mm-hmm.
I was on one episode of Parks and Rec. And my character's name is Jewish Greg, which...
There we go.
So I remember being named in the room. I was covering for China Joe, and they had me in it, and they're pitching in the room, what should your character's name be? What should the name be? And I think Dan Gore shouts from across the room, Jewish Greg. It immediately gets written into the script. It's never pitched on as anything else but that. And so, you know, in my very limited IMDb credits... of acting, very crazily, I've played 3 things. Once was I was mistaken as a blues brother on Hollywood Boulevard for Arrested Development, but I'm actually an Orthodox Jew. Another time, I was in the movie I Love You, Man, and my character was supposed to be J-Date Guy, and now I'm Jewish Greg. So Jim, after all of that, let me tell you, I think there's some kind of...
Yeah, there's a theme.
Yeah,
there's a theme.
Yeah,
I think it works. But think about it. You've only had 3 credits. They're all pretty big credits. Arrested Development,
and I
Love You, Man, and Parks.
Offer Only, I never auditioned, which is really amazing.
Yeah, you are Offer Only. I have heard that.
But didn't plan this, but what a great way to, I think, bring in and talk about who's joining us today.
Yeah, this is pretty huge, you guys, for the Parks fans.
Tana, talk about cartoonishly Jewish names. We have Dennis Feinstein himself. Jason Matsoukas is here with us.
Yay!
In studio to talk about his character in this episode we're going to be doing. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Gentlemen, I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. What a delight, too, to watch an episode of Parks in the middle of the day.
You caught up on the episode. Good for you. I like that.
I'm so excited. I was so excited to dig back in. And I really was like, oh, man, I got to go. Because this episode is in such a flux period of the show in terms of what's going on. And I was like, oh, right. Oh, I want to watch the disgrace, how Ben gets fired in disgrace and all that. I was like, oh, right. It was great. I'm excited to chat.
Well, the episode that Jason is referring to, the episode was forced to watch in the daytime with himself in it, which is also a great little detail, is...
Also weird. Always weird. To be watching a show you enjoy and then you appear on screen.
And you're like, I'm pretty
and
funny.
I'm like, oh, God. This guy's here?
Before we get into the episode, which we're going to do that, your resume overall is just... pretty amazing. So, I mean, literally, just even the other day, I'm listening to Howard Stern and your name comes up. I mean, you're just like, you're everywhere. You're a UCB guy. You're obviously an improv guy. You prove that every day with the different things you do. But you also do something that I am super jealous of. You do the podcast with Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael.
Yeah.
And
How Did This Get Made? It's called.
I think June, Well, first of all, Paul, too, who also did an episode of Parks and Rec.
That's right.
That poor guy had to do a, what is that dance?
Oh, the worm, right?
He had to do the worm. And I remember watching that, like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, does that suck? Like that. And Pert Hapley, Jay Jackson had to do that also.
Yeah. Same season. Yeah.
Very, very awful. Awful for many reasons. But anyway, I think June, who also was on Parks and Rec, everything comes back to Parks and Rec. She played April's, what do you call it?
Her counterpart. Yeah, in Eagleton. Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So anyway, I'm very jealous that you do that with them because I love those guys.
It's great fun. It's a, you know, and shockingly, we've been now doing it for 12 years.
Wow.
In podcast terms is like forever.
Yes.
Very fun. Very fun. I love that we get to do it. And there is something quite lovely about all of us having been on Parks, which is now also so long ago in a way that blows my mind.
Oh, God. Blows my mind every day.
On this, yeah. I bet.
And you're the king of Mike Schur shows because you've done Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
yes,
Parks,
I have.
The Good Place. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I was not on The Office, and that's, I mean, Mike worked on The Office, it wasn't his show, but I wasn't on The Office, so that's the hole in my,
you know what's interesting about that?
Bingo card.
Yeah, because I auditioned for The Office once, and I didn't get it,
and
of course, I was very, you know, like, oh, that's a shame, I love that show. I wonder, had I guessed it on The Office, would that have knocked me out of the running? I don't know, because sometimes they don't want those. Now, we know Rashida, obviously.
Oh, you're saying,
there was
would
a
that
big
have,
crossover.
Would that have made you, yeah, would that have made you not attractive to them when it came around to Parks? Oh, that's interesting.
There are other reasons he's unattractive.
Well, yes. But let's don't, you know, that's between my surgeon and I. Okay. No, but seriously, I've always wondered, like, I wonder if that would have screwed
Well, Jim,
the
was
whole
it
thing
a,
up.
Was the part you auditioned for on The Office, like, very large? Because if it was a big part, maybe so. But if it was a small, memorable part, that might have only made them be like, oh, we've got to get Jim
we
for
need
this
to bring
next
that
show.
Jason, I am Jim O'Hare. So, yes, it was quite a huge part. And I don't remember what kind of part it was. But
it was Michael Scott.
It was, it was about the guy who ran the place, something like that.
Yeah.
So, at the time, you know, when you don't get a gig, you audition for it, you're like, oh, that sucks, especially a show you love.
No, I
Jim,
agree.
Jim, we didn't know, we don't care.
You know, and I also think, like, because I auditioned for The Office multiple times for multiple roles.
Oh, wow.
You know, and because I oftentimes will talk to people, too. It's like there is something about getting in front of people, even for jobs you don't get.
Right.
Getting in front of people, doing your thing so that maybe they don't picture you for this role here and now.
100%.
But that later on down the line, they're like, oh, I know. Mm. I like that guy, Jim. He would be good for this. Or I liked Jason when he came in for this. Maybe he would be good for that.
I say this all the time, and I tell young people who are up and coming, every audition, it's about doing your best because you don't know what these people are doing down the road. So when I audition for Parks, I audition for Ron Swanson. Well, you know, can you imagine anyone other than Nick Offerman? But my point was, I'm going to be going in for these people who created The Office. I just want them to remember me. So if there's a guest spot down the road, for whatever reason, I want to impress these guys. It was never did I think they're going to give Jim O'Hare Ron Swanson. And then whatever happened in that room, they liked enough to bring me back for Jerry. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history or whatever. But you're so right. It's just... you just want to get in the room with these people and show them what you can do, and hopefully it sticks in their brain.
Because you don't know when they're going to decide, like, oh, we need this or that, and so it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think when I auditioned, when they were starting Parks, I auditioned for the part that ultimately was Paul
Schneider, right?
Paul Schneider,
Mark
Brandanowitz. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the part I believe I auditioned for first.
So did Adam Scott.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I can see that. Yeah, totally. Great part. Great. I mean, I was disappointed to not. I mean, I didn't get close, I don't think, even remotely. But I was so delighted to just even be like up for or being seen by all these folks because I was just a massive fan. Couldn't have been more excited.
That's how I felt. Yeah.
This is the power of a great casting director. And we should talk about the episode, obviously. But Allison Jones,
yes.
who cast The Office, who did the pilot in the first season of Parks and Rec. Randomly, my old boss, actually how I got started on The Office was Allison. I wound up working for her during the writer's strike as an assistant and knew she wanted to be a writer and called Greg Daniels and Mike Schur once a week.
2007 writer's strike?
Yeah. And she called Greg and Mike once a week and said, you're going to do a new show. You need to meet my assistant. He wants to be a writer. And they brought me on to be a writer's assistant.
That was amazing.
But that's the power of a great casting director who's like, this person is great. And I'm going to keep bringing them in until the right showrunners, the right producers realize this is the right role for them and cast them. Which I think is a nice little way in to talk about this episode, which is here you are playing a role I can't picture anybody else playing.
No, nobody.
After one episode when you're Dennis Feinstein, it's impossible to picture any other person being Dennis Feinstein. I'll tell you, a lot of fun was in the room had about what should your character's name be.
See, this is what I want to know, Greg. This is great. This is very helpful because I don't know any of this, the stories of the behind the scenes of how... Because once I'm given a script, you've been living with it for so much longer than I did.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the fun of this kind of character whose real name is Dante Fieri, right?
Fierro. I was called Dante Fierro.
Fierro, that's right.
But he chose Dennis Feinstein because it would be more in Pawnee, a more exciting name.
Yes. It's an exotic name in the world of Pawnee.
Exotic, even better.
Dennis Feinstein. And when there are moments that are pitched like that, when everybody cracks up and you know you hit a home run, you know you have stepped on something super funny that also is not just a joke, but actually speaks to the lore of Pawnee, right? It's a joke about your character. It's also a joke about Pawnee. That's one of those great moments. So it's so funny that you, of course, are the one and only Dennis Feinstein in today's episode that we're talking about, which is season 4, episode 10. It's Citizen Nope. It was written by Dave King and directed by Randall Einhorn.
Love Randall. Throwing that out.
Love Dave. Love Randall. Great.
Good
home
peeps.
Runs.
Good peeps.
You know what? Speaking of love, I love the air date. It was December 8th, 2011. And
and if I remember correctly,
your blurb skills are incredible.
My blurb skills, you wouldn't even know I was going to read something. This is so natural. Leslie tries to keep herself busy during her suspension from the department, but her city council campaign suffers because of the Ben relationship scandal. Meanwhile, Ben searches for a job in the private sector, and the parks department tries to come up with the perfect Christmas gift for Leslie, which is almost impossible, and yet they did it.
Mm. Jim, superb blurb work.
Thanks.
Superb blurb. Yeah.
It's become my thing. There's a lot of talk about a series spinoff with just blurbs. Anyway, whatever. That's other.
It's just a podcast of blurbs.
That's other projects. We don't need to get involved.
Oops, all blurbs.
But we have our Nopes notes, just a few call outs we want to address right away before we get into the synopsis, our synopsis. We're heavy on Nopes puns here.
Apparently.
Yes.
You know, in both of Ben's...
Don't hate us, Jason. Don't hate us.
It's just, there's just a Jason-shaped hole in the door now.
He's gone.
It's a reverse Kool-Aid guy.
Oh, no.
In both of Ben's job interviews this episode, he winds up meeting with characters who we've previously seen. First, Barney, the accountant, who first appeared in Leslie's house and then Telethon as he was a rec center instructor. One of my favorite characters, Barney.
Played by John Bulma. Just a little info.
Thank you.
Yes.
And Jason's character, Dennis Feinstein, is the man Tom tried to sell his scent to in Indianapolis, of course. And then, one suggestion at the Parks Committee of Pawnee meeting, the PCP meeting, which Leslie runs as a citizen, is Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, Can't Lose from the series Friday Night Lights, which I know Mike Shore was a big fan of. And for what it's worth, I went through the script and I was curious, where did that come from? That line is not in the script. So it was a moment on set.
I love the comparison between script and production. That's a great. I'm curious. I would like to know how my scene measures up in that regard.
We'll run it through the computer, through the database, and see what percentages.
Well, Jason, did you audition or was this an offer? Like at this point, were you?
I was offered Dennis Feinstein.
Yeah.
I was offered Dennis Feinstein as that. With no understanding that it would ever come back. It was just as that initial episode that you mentioned, Greg, where Aziz comes to pitch me Tommy Fresh. Is that what it's called? Tommy Fresh, I think?
Tommy Fresh,
yeah.
His cologne, and we have a back and forth in the bar. That was the only thing I did. It was just that scene, and it was great. And then it just in the way that I love and Greg, maybe you can shed some light on this, that every once in a while I would get a call that's like, oh, we need another Dennis Feinstein scene. Are you available? You know, and I would be thrilled to do it.
Those are the best actor calls.
Yes.
They really are.
You're just hanging out, watching an episode of TV on a 2 p.m. of yourself. Yes. And you're like, you want me for more of me? Yes. All I'm doing is watching me. Well, what I loved about your character is that each time we see him, he does get crazier. And you start crazy.
Yeah. Oh, you're already
you
crazy.
You start crazy. I mean, there's an episode in a few seasons that we're going to get to, and we got to talk again with you. But now you're going to have, I think, you're going to have Ben and Tom and Andy in the scene.
There's, and Chris,
Right? And it's just, who are the other people? Who needs to be in a scene with Dennis Feinstein at this point? Who has not experienced him?
I was always wanting a Dennis Feinstein, Ron Swanson standoff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Just because, like,
that would be amazing. Like,
what could be more of the opposite energy to Dennis Feinstein's manic, chaotic craziness than the absolute, terrifyingly still and measured Ron Swanson?
Yes. Oh, that would have been great.
That would have been really, really great.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the episode, because we're going to get to Jason very soon, his scene, but we're going to talk to him the whole time, obviously. When you have Jason
the whole
here,
time, you have to talk he to ain't Jason going anywhere.
If you don't mind me saying, just to respond a little bit to what you just said, Greg, though, just to, like, when you're outlining all these people and all this stuff, what I and rewatching it too, what I love about the show is. And forgive me, perhaps you've said this in the past, but just for me, I was reminded myself, Ben Schwartz, John Ralphio's in this episode. Like you said, the accountant, all these people are from the past. Like, I love that Pawnee, as the show goes on, Pawnee just becomes this populated by characters, almost Springfield on The Simpsons-esque kind of world in which when you need supporting players, instead of just creating new people out of whole cloth, you're just pulling and reusing and reconfiguring all of these players that already exist. And I love that. I love the sprawl of Parks and Rec. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that you, by the end of this show, you really have a sense of Pawnee, not just these characters, but Pawnee. And I always, in that regard, figured that Dennis Feinstein was a Montgomery Burns.
Oh, I love
that. Yes, oh, that is a good reference, yeah.
I love it.
Even when, along those lines, even the people, the background extras, they tried to keep them the same in the town, in the city, you know, in our building, because they wanted it to feel like these are the same people.
That's great.
This town is this big.
Right.
Which is crazy that there is a Dennis Feinstein in a town that is this big.
I mean, that's kind of nutty. Some sort of evil industrialist.
Yes.
Some sort of like in malevolent Pawnee. Businessman is still somehow controlling Pawnee. I love that.
Pawnee becomes this has this mythic status that one day people, when they're entrepreneurs, are like, obviously I'm going to move to Pawnee and strike.
Yes, Pawnee is my destination.
Ashley's Memorial Day sale is going on now. Shop our biggest selection of hot buys, cool deals, or shop limited-time savings on new summer spaces. Plus, get 72-month special financing on select in-store mattress purchases made with your Ashley Advantage Synchrony credit card between May 14th and June 3rd. Whether you're redecorating indoors or rethinking your outdoor space, save big on this season's trending styles. Only at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. No minimum purchase required. See store for details.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
You work with the best, and the best bring it. Because I'm guessing, you know, we recently spoke with Mo Collins, and, you know, she played Joan Calamezzo, and she's Mo
Fantastic.
Collins. And
what a great character.
Just the best. And she knew they let her go. They just let her go. And they knew what she could bring, and they let her go. And that's,
I will say, like, I felt very similarly set up, you know, like there, it was very clear, like there was a lot of room to define Dennis Feinstein as we went, you know, like I'm almost positive it's not in the script that Dennis Feinstein hunts people.
I think you're
90%
right.
Sure that is an improvised line. And then only comes to be more significant in the next episode that we were talking about in the cigar bar, when it seems as though Dennis Feinstein would like to hunt Tom Haverford.
Yes.
Damn, amazing.
Well, let's talk about this episode and our synopsis. It's Christmas time in Pawnee, and Leslie is serving her 2-week suspension from her job.
Which is literally the worst thing that could happen to Leslie. No.
Right. I cannot work.
To be suspended from her job. She can't work. Yeah.
Leslie insists on sneaking back into her office to grab work to do at home, which Chris prohibits. She decides to use her free time to focus on her campaign for city council, but her advisors suggest she relax until the post-scandal poll numbers are released. We've talked about a lot, but Pawnee's think tank has the ability to do snap polls at any point on city council races. Like every Christmas, everyone in the Parks Department receives extremely thoughtful gifts from Leslie, so Ron and Anne suggest they all work together to give her something special. I just want to call it right away. In the cold open, we learn that Chris Traeger is wearing an experimental workout shirt called Bumbleflex, made out of bees wings. And it's so silly.
It's so silly.
Stupid. And it's so great.
One of the things that I love about this show is the specificity that is brought to bear on things. It's not just that Chris Traeger is up and exercising. It's that he's doing it to a degree that he has experimental gear that is that he's on the cutting edge in Pawnee. He's on the cutting edge of new running gear that's made with artificial bee wings.
Yeah.
Great. Like the drilling down, drilling down into the incredible specificity of these characters, because that helps you so understand Chris Traeger. You know, is it that line, not just that he's there, that he's exercising and that he's being himself, that he's testing out bee-based, artificial bee-wing-based gear. I love it. I love that.
He's a workhorse. He's a runner. He's Chris. You know, some of the gifts from Leslie that she gives to the Parks team, speaking of specificity, this is the kind of moment that's fun in the room, right? We know there's going to be a comedy game. The comedy game of the scene is Leslie's going to give gifts, right? And we know that Leslie's an amazing gift giver. They're hyper-specific. They're very personalized. What would each of these people actually want that they'd be actually happy about? And so what happens? Donna receives a zebra print jacket with the words, "You can get it," embroidered on the back in hot pink. Leslie got Tom a pocket watch, but she took out the clock part and put a little thing that reads, "Baller time." Leslie painted, maybe commissioned, maybe painted herself a picture of April slaughtering the black-eyed peas.
I loved that specifically.
That's my favorite one, actually, out of all of them.
Great. Yeah. I loved it.
Well, and Ron, when Ron was out of the office, Leslie installed an automatic door button that would close the doors around him with the push of a button. And I'm pretty sure that both Mike Shore and line producer Morgan Sackett had one installed on their office doors as well. Also, Jerry's gift, socks.
Jerry's gift, socks. You know
why?
She gets
me.
Because she gets me.
She gets me.
She just gets me. Yeah.
Just like probably the line of the episode. She gets
with such pride, with such happiness.
Yeah, I mean, she's done all these amazing things.
You won the Oscar for that, right, Jim? You won the Oscar for that?
Yeah, a Peabody Award, whatever. There's a couple awards. a lot of talk about a future spinoff with that. But and I just love that. To the extent that she won for everybody else, like amazing, amazing. But Jerry is just as happy with those socks as April is with her black-eyed peas dead and that amazing, she somehow got a gold record for Andy. I mean, amazing. But I do think the black-eyed peas, that is my favorite of gifts that everybody got.
And not for nothing, I just recently turned 40, and I have to tell you, if someone gave me socks, I'd be like, you know what? That's really great.
Yes, I can use those.
A friend of mine gave me socks last year for Christmas, and I was like, thank you so much.
Yeah. You guys, I'm 60 years old, and my family still buys me underwear, and I'm not joking.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, Greg, just on a process level?
Sure.
When you guys are in the room, And you're breaking this part of the story where Leslie's gifts to everybody, you know that's going to be a part of it. Do you guys stop and just for a period of time, just pitch on what are these gifts for each person? Do you remember any of the unused gifts that were pitched?
To answer the first part of your question, yes. I mean, generally, when you have a moment like this, you'll, in the prep of an episode, the writers who, will pitch on everything and it'll just keep getting pitched on. We talked about this when Mo Collins was here, that, when it comes to writing comedy, there's always a funnier joke, right? There's always something funnier. So a moment like this, a scene like this, could have easily been 4 hours in the room one day. Because there's always a funnier thing. And then our props people, our set deck people are like, wait, you already told us what these characters are getting as a gift. We already bought Jerry's socks.
Yeah, because somebody has to go out and then produce a painting of April killing the black guy. Killing the black eyed peas, that's not an insignificant prop.
It's a major.
Important and has to be gorgeous, and it is. But if you came back and were like, oh, instead we want her to kill Coldplay.
Right.
Then you're like, oh, fuck. Okay, wait a minute.
We have to clear Coldplay now.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, in our synopsis, so we got to get to Jason too. Ben begins looking for a new job after his resignation as assistant city manager. He first interviews for an accounting position with Barney Varm, V-A-R-M-N, accounting firm, but turns it down after realizing it isn't what he really wants to do. At Ben's suggestion, Leslie forms a citizens' action committee to keep busy and continue her involvement with the local government. She names the group the Parks Committee Upon E, or PCP.
Because why not?
and I love that even when faced with the truth that is PCP, that is the drug, she doubles down. And it's like, no, because like the drug, comparing them to PCP. I love that she's, and that's something that I love about the show is that the show does the joke that it's called PCP and then yes-ands themselves into a further heightening of the joke, not just this joke, but the next joke by oh no, it's not oh no, we can't do that. It's yes and more.
Well, we talk about that sometimes in the room. This was a very, what we call like a written joke, right? It is perhaps funniest and with the fewest words if you read it, right? This is you can see PCP very quickly. In this sense, you need to spend the real estate now in another character saying a line, you mean PCP. And then another joke is necessary on top of that. So it comes back to our main character making a joke on that joke, right? So yeah.
Boy, you guys have a lot to think about. Damn it. I'm glad I'm just good looking. And
you just get the lines and you're like, well, what do I have to say?
The PTP.
I love socks.
You're just the hunk, Jim. You're just the hunk.
It's all the looks. That's all the, let's face it, I'm the eye candy.
Well, the accounting firm scene and Adam Scott's performance in this episode in general, we need to talk about. I love first that Ben is so vulnerable and self-hating, yet he's cheerful. In his breakfast scene with Leslie, he's even smiling when he says he's resigned in disgrace. This gamut of emotions that this character is going through in this episode is great, especially we won't talk about it now, but he's going to go through quite a gauntlet in the next episode too. Like we're putting his character through the ringer. But I love Barney's character, and I love the fact that Ben can't help but make jokes about accounting jokes.
Yeah.
And bad jokes. Really dumb, terrible jokes.
That are killing it. When he says, Ted, come in here. It's one of my favorite parts.
And then he goes, do it for Ted.
Yes.
It's so funny. And I love Adam's performance because Adam is delivering these terrible accounting jokes in a way that they're crushing and he's disappointed.
He's disappointed.
How much he's crushing is like, oh no, maybe I don't want this job.
And I also, he's so kind of pathetic from the beginning of the episode. And by pathetic, I just mean it's heartbreaking. He has, there's a quick back and forth with him and Leslie. Leslie goes, in a way, my suspension from work was kind of a blessing. He's like, yeah, I feel the same way about resigning in disgrace. And she goes, totally. This is how you have to resign in disgrace, which we all know from his days of mayor of where, what was he the mayor of? The Ice Town.
Yeah.
And he
Partridge
resigned in disgrace. God bless this man. Yeah. And this he did for Leslie. This time he did it for Leslie.
Well, there's a great thing here in the, how, you know, there's a joke being made of how often he says, I resigned in disgrace. And
right.
she says, maybe stop, don't lead with that. But there's something quite funny about, actually, I'm going to own that I resigned in disgrace, right? I'm going to find, we're
finding. And then later.
Yeah.
Later, is it John Ralphio who says that he resigned in disgrace? Like, yes. I feel like one of the other characters puts that on him.
Yes.
He's not even brought it up there. So that's how it's being discussed in larger
right,
Pawnee.
Right,
yes.
Right. Yes.
And he's also so, he's telling her he's going, he has a, how was he auditioned? He has a interview for an accounting firm to be their accountant. Yeah. I mean, think about how awful that is.
Yeah.
The accountant of an accounting firm. No shade on any accounting firms out there.
Jim, but, you are fucked. You're going to hear from all the accountants.
Yeah. Canceled. But it's just so heartbreaking. And yet, I don't know, because, you know, Adam is just so good at that role. And yeah, but you're
there's something. There's something really great about how defeated he is, and the fact that he keeps using the phrase "resigned in disgrace," resigned in disgrace. But then that John Ralphio uses it only confirms that he's correct.
Yes. Oh, that's like, a great point. Yes.
Yeah. That
Adam,
is a good point.
Adam, or Ben, or you know, Adam Scott's performance, but Ben Wyatt's point of view is he's right. Everybody knows he resigned in disgrace. He should feel that acutely, and he does.
Yes.
And that's what's great.
You know, little did we know that this was going to start or continue this long run of Barney cameos, always cracking up at Ben's bad jokes. There's going to be a wonderful scene in a season or two where Ben winds up back at the accounting firm and they throw a huge party for him and he kills it with jokes and he's so smug. He gives a smug, like, wink to camera. That's one of my favorite Ben Wyatt moments in the series. It's funny to think about, and we talked about this, Jason, with Dennis Feinstein. It's funny to think about how a character or a joke starts and you don't know in the course of the series how often it's going to get mined and how crazy it's going to get.
Sure.
Same thing with calzones. There's a moment in this episode coming up when Ben and Leslie are having a meal and he says just under his breath, "Man, I love me a calzone."
I know.
He just can't help it. But the calzone barrel is quite deep when it comes to Ben. The accounting jokes.
I wrote that down. Was that the first calzone reference?
No, we learn about his love of calzones in season three.
Okay, so he's already loving them.
Right. We already know that he has a thing for calzones and no one understands logically.
Right. Yeah. Though I do love a good calzone. I'm not going to.
Who doesn't love a calzone?
You know?
But it is, that's what I think Parks really. It, kind of a little bit of what you guys were talking about earlier is there is an element to Parks which is familial, you know, even though it is a workplace set show in many regards, it is a family show for all intents and purposes. You know what I mean? As opposed to The Office,
that because I love that reference. It is a family show. I love that.
You know, it's a family show. It's a found family.
Yeah.
You know, it's a found family of people who work together in a way that, yes, The Office was people that work together, but they do just work together, even though they have their fondnesses and their relationships and all the rest. Parks is really a family show in terms of its kind of outlook or point of view in a lot of ways. And that's kind of what it's about oftentimes is the vicissitudes of family life.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And that's what I love about it. And that's what's kind of great is you're getting to see these people grapple with elements and events that challenge them in their interpersonal relationships, not just their work life, not just like, oh, no, I'm suspended from work. That is, I'm suspended from work. How does that impact me giving my coworkers gifts, you know,
right.
How do I show my love this way, you know, and that is family, you know.
That's such a great lead, and I think to the next part of synopsis, and it'll make sense in a second, but we're about to start talking about the team now is going to start doing something for Leslie, that idea of the family giving back, taking care of their own, right? So in the next section of our synopsis, Anne has the great idea to make Leslie a miniaturized version of The Office out of gingerbread. Ben goes on another job interview, this time meeting with cologne maker Dennis Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
But Ben is disgusted with Feinstein's business practices and walks out on the interview. The PCP, we know what we're talking about here. I don't have to clarify. The PCP becomes a loud presence at town meetings. That could just be true in general about PCP, by the way. And at Chris's job, thanks to Leslie's intense leadership. So we're almost there with Dennis, but this scene where they decide to make this miniaturized version of The Office at a Gingerbread One, I love Nick in the scene when he has the idea of to make it out of wood. And very quickly, Anne, whose comedy game in this one is taking such pride in how much Leslie loves her that she's the favorite clearly in that room of people. She has this other idea that everyone loves and he just can't help saying under his breath, or would. He can't help.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's going to have to get out of his comfort zone in the storyline. I think it's so funny.
Anne totally took the wind out of his sails.
Yes.
He had come up with this great idea. Here's what we're going to do. It's going to involve wood, of course, because that's what Ron's going to do. But Anne, in her excitement and her love of Leslie, and as much as I don't know if anyone could love someone as much as Leslie loves Anne, but Anne loves her back. And she just comes up with this idea that is just steamrolled over whatever Ron is thinking.
Well, Jason.
Greg.
Hi.
Have you met?
Yeah. This scene with you and Adam, this Dennis Feinstein scene, a few things I want to call out just to set the stage to talk about this. You know, we should talk about it like it's the Zapruder film. Like,
yes. Let's go it frame by frame, right? Yes. Frame by frame.
First, one of the beats is that Dennis berates his current CFO and notable father of two, which we learn, Eddie, in front of Ben, yelling, "Don't talk to Eddie," and saying, "Treat him like you would treat a person in another country that you paid $25,000 to hunt." That's one thing just to set the, and we're going to get to that. I also love the fact that in the set deck, there's your signature, right, is above your head. Also,
and it's enormous.
Enormous. Advertisements for other colognes, Blackout and Allergic, are in the background. This is a guy who takes himself and this persona quite seriously. It's quite. Tell us, can you bring us into the actor space? Can you bring us into the first?
Let me get into the headspace. Yeah,
if you need a moment, if you need a tissue, anything we can do to help you out, this might get deep.
I just need to cross over into the artist's mind. Go ahead.
How did this? How do you remember when you were like, I get Dennis, I get this character, and I know where the comedy mind is?
You know, it's interesting. I think that one of the things that really helped me obviously, in the first episode that I did, like we talked about earlier, where Aziz is pitching me the cologne, it's in a nightclub. The setting is we're all in a nightclub, and there's a lot of hubbub and stuff, and our exchange is brief, you know. And I understood him to be kind of a dick, a larger than life kind of this guy that Tom is, you know, reverential of, and he's rich and he's got all this power and blah blah blah. But there was something about that office set with the giant name Dennis Feinstein that I was like, oh, this is the guy. The guy is. He's not, that's where it clicked in more that he's like the Monty Burns. He's the Mr. Burns of Pawnee, that he is, it's all about him. His name is enormous behind him. All of his colognes are, because by that point, they'd also put a bunch of his colognes in other way, in other, there's a lot of Easter eggs of like advertisements for Dennis Feinstein colognes, and they show up places.
Yes,
it also helped to understand exactly he is big. He's like in this world, he's a big deal. And so that helped too, to be like, oh no, I need to have even more gravitas, or even more of a, I need to be even more of a threat in some ways, you know, is how I started to perceive it. Because in my mind, he is absolutely malicious.
Yes. And what's so interesting
and this is where that starts. This is the scene where I feel like this is the scene, and specifically how Dennis Feinstein treats Ben, and then, of course, Eddie, his current CFO, is so reprehensible that I was like, oh, this is how to build off of this guy.
And what's so interesting is that first scene that you're talking about, the first time we meet Dennis in this story with Tom is trying to impress Dennis, right? Tom wants Dennis to buy into
this. He's got his own cologne that he wants to.
He has a sycophant. He has a guy who's like, I you're my guy. You're like, I worship you. I want to be like you. In this case, you're meeting with someone who very quickly is like, who the hell are you, man? Yeah. Right? Who doesn't immediately buy into the hype of Dennis. In fact, is worried about how you're treating your CFO. And that must have also, I think, as my guess is, as we've talked about, I've only done a few acting moments.
You have very few.
But that must have been very, very fun in developing the characters. Like, I'm now playing a wholly different comedy game.
Yes, and what the game that I was playing and that only gets built on from the first scene, it's there. It really locks in here, even though it's very brief, and then it just goes crazy. Which is this is a villain. Like, I think of Dennis Feinstein in Pawnee as one of the truly one of the only villains. One of the only characters, because it is such a. Everybody, the relationships inside of Pawnee are oftentimes so loving and so like wonderful and caring and kind and generous in a way that I'm like, oh, with some exceptions, I want to be one of the people that is none of those. You know, there's a line later when Dennis Feinstein, you know, the crowd is booing him because he's just a being at his most villainous. And he says, you know, I say something like, I am nourished by your hatred.
Yes, yes, yes. Like,
that's who Dennis Feinstein is to me. He's the guy who, he doesn't care if he's a villain. In fact, he wants it. He invites it. Give it to me. Give me your hatred.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, John Glazer's Jeremy Jam, who will come on the show soon enough. Like, he's one of our, I would say, one of our mainstay
great
villains.
Villain.
But even his character by the end has that thing that we can't help doing at Parks in a good way, which is like, can you find the good? Can you find the good in this bad? But
Dennis Feinstein never redeemed.
Never found the good. And I would tell you, as an actor, I'm super jealous of that because, you know, we're also cast based on our looks and everything else. And, you know, this Irish Catholic punim of mine punim, whatever the hell it is. It, I don't get those opportunities. And it's got to be so much fun to play a Dennis Feinstein.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's got to be fun.
It's so fun. And also, it was fun to be on set because pulling back the curtain a bit, because that's, I suspect, what we're here to do on a podcast like this. You know, there was quite a lot of opportunity in this scene, in other scenes, to open it up and improvise or have people pitch alt lines. And it was very fun to be on set because Dennis Feinstein is able to say stuff that a lot of other characters on the show couldn't, a reprehensible character. And so it was fun to both be able to improvise from that point of view, but also I got the sense that whoever was there, Morgan or the writers or whoever, they were excited to pitch on Dennis Feinstein runs. Like, there's a great joke in the next, the episode you were talking about before, where Andy and Ben and Tom all come to Dennis and they want him to help them out financially and give to the charity and blah, blah, blah. And they all go out, they go to the cigar bar. Anyway, at the end of the episode, Ben comes in and he basically tells Dennis Feinstein to fuck off and then runs away. And Dennis Feinstein is going to chase after him. And I think Dan Gore, the king of arriving and just lobbing a joke into the fray.
Yeah.
Dan Gore from out of nowhere goes, because I said something to Eddie, the character who is the CFO in this scene. And Dan Gore goes, oh, it'd be funny if you just went, Eddie, get my crossbow. And I was like, done. Done. And it's like, it's in there. Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah. Yes, it's like a great Dennis Feinstein line. And it was just pitched out of, oh, this is what he would say, something like a this. And then we did a bunch of takes, which were just different versions of, you know, evil intent declared.
So good.
I love watching Dan when he would pitch, because he kind of looked off into the distance and then something would hit him and boom,
twinkle.
He'd just throw it out there and it was usually gold.
Yeah. It's such a great point. This character is so bizarre and mean and unlike so many other characters on pretty much every other character on the series. So it is fun to work that that comedy joke engine. Like, oh, I don't have to worry about saving them. I don't have to worry about proving that actor.
I don't have to worry about being liked.
I could just make a joke.
This is one of the only characters in this show that is, by design, unlikable. Never redeemed, unlikable through and through, just rotten. Yeah.
Even more so than Glazer, I would say. Yeah, even absolutely. More so than Councilman Jam.
I think John gets. He gets
some nice moments. Sure,
he does. Yes, exactly. He gets to have softer, nicer moments. He gets to have beats like that. For Dennis Feinstein, his arc is he starts mean, becomes evil, and then like at the end of his run, he's like, I gotta go kill my dad. He is just consistently malicious. Yeah.
Oh, that's so much fun. I'm so jealous.
I wish we could talk about this one scene and this character forever. We should push on with the episode, but obviously Jason's gonna stick around and keep talking
about
this. Clearly, a big Parks fan.
Don't leave me with Greg here, Jason.
I would never.
Legally, you're not allowed to be in a room with me, just me.
This is true.
So in our synopsis, Leslie learns her poll numbers have taken a staggering hit due to the scandal, and her advisors drop her campaign entirely. Ben runs into John Ralphio, a scene we've talked about, and advises Ben to use his free time to dive into one of his passions instead of rushing into another job. You know, when John Ralphio is the one giving you sage advice, you know, something's off in your life. Chris feels responsible for derailing Leslie's campaign and lifts her suspension as her Christmas present. You know,
can I jump in here for a second, briefly, Greg, if you don't mind? And only because I think this is a great kind of illustration of how I feel like the show does a great job, not just servicing the storyline of the episode, but the characters that are going through it. It's not just that Ben sees John Ralphio and has this interaction, because we also get a bunch of very funny specifics from John Ralphio about that he's just gotten waxed, a bikini wax from a woman named Kim. Like we get here he is just arriving for this brief moment to kind of help shine a light on something for Ben's character. Ben Wyatt, not Ben Schwartz, Ben Wyatt. And John Ralphio, it both is there to service the Ben Wyatt storyline, but also gets a bunch of defining characteristics and bits for himself that are very funny.
Right.
You know, and that's why I think the show is so strong, is like when Ben goes and has an experience with John Ralphio, that experience isn't just good for Ben, it's good for that scene is strong because of every specific that John Ralphio is giving.
John Ralphio does so many hit and runs. Yeah. You know, he just comes in.
So he makes his money. Yeah.
And then,
so he makes his money as a character.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so brilliant. And he got a bikini wax and I believe a Brazilian. And can a man have a Brazilian? Yeah. I don't know. Is that a thing? Well, sure. Do guys have Brazilian?
John Ralphio does.
For sure.
And wears it well. And apparently the butthole. Yeah.
We did learn that too. But that's
Jim,
a great
I dare you. Go get one.
Really?
Yeah.
Final episode of the podcast.
We'll record the episode while it's happening.
Wow. Yep. Maybe.
There you
Maybe.
Go.
Well, it is a great scene. John Ralphio's career coach. It's something, you know, really unexpected, but there's something also, like I said, to point out, that's how you know Ben's in a place, that John Ralphio is the one giving you something, some sage advice. And we had seen Ben with John Ralphio's character earlier in the season with Entertainment 720, right? Fail spectacularly, and Ben was the voice of wisdom. So here's this other guy who he just saw be a cartoon with his own money, with his own career, and now he's the one being like, actually, let me tell you something. I think it's such a fun scene. Also, anytime you can get Ben Schwartz in a scene, in an episode, you do it.
Ben has heard me say this, and he has told me I have to stop saying it, but I will not. I think he's a genius. And I really believe that. And I think he's a comic genius. I think he's an improv genius. And some of the stuff we watched him do, some of the outtakes that you can watch online, him with Retta. Oh my God.
His stuff
amazing.
Is so funny on the show. He's so funny when he's bouncing off of everybody, because he can mold perfectly that insane character to whoever he's with, whether it is. And especially when it's like, right, Jenny Slate comes in as his sister.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Like, they're insane together. But then when he's bouncing off of Aziz, he's great. When he's bouncing off of everybody, but especially I love the dynamic between him and Adam Scott. I think that when he's with someone who's just playing like a straight yes. man response,
yes.
it's dynamite.
Yes.
And how Ron just negates him. He just negates
totally.
Him.
Yeah, he can't stand it.
He will not put up with
it. I have no time for this.
Yeah.
Well, we should close out this episode. Because it's a really amazing end to the.
Oh my God, I feel like we just started.
I know. Well, in the end, in our synopsis, Jim, I'm sorry to do it for you. I know we just got going. Leslie returns to City Hall and is pleasantly surprised by the gingerbread parks department that everyone made for her. The group presents her with another gift, revealing that they have all volunteered to become her new campaign staff. They remind Leslie of her tireless efforts to assist coworkers and friends over the years. Leslie is deeply touched and accepts their help. And in the tag, in perhaps one of our most famous best tags in the series, we see John Ralphio at the accounting firm Ben interviewed at, where he begins and ends his temp job in record time. Not just in record time, it was pitched as a one-take scene, as a walk and talk, that he gets hired and fired in the same scene. It's one of those pitches you hear, you're like, that is great. I don't know what it's going to look like. Obviously, it's going to look even different than we had in the script because you have someone like Ben Schwartz coming in who's going to add all this other stuff. And it kills me. That scene kills me.
Great. It's a great tag for this episode.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have a running theme that we talk about on Parks and Rec, gifts, parties, and jobs, that pretty much every episode of Parks and Rec, minus a few, has at least one of those. Either a gift is given or received. Well, I guess if gifts received has been given. There's a party of some form or someone gets a new job. That happens a lot in our episodes. And in this one, it's a Christmas episode. There are gifts given at the beginning. There are gifts given now at the end to Leslie. But not just that, but the gifts that the park staff is giving to Leslie are new jobs for them. Kind of the first time we've seen that in that... April is now going to be the youth outreach and director of new media for Leslie's campaign. Tom Haverford is going to be image consultant, swagger coach. Anne is going to be office manager and volunteer coordinator. Andy, security, sweets, body man, javelin, if need be. Which makes me think, does he have one nearby ready to go at all times? Donna Meagle, transpo, aka rides in her Benz. Ron says, any other damn thing you might need. And we have two killer Jerry moments in this scene. First, when Leslie's campaign Amazing. Banner's yes. unfurled, it's a sight gag. Sight gags kill me. It's the banner just unfurls right in front of your face, just as you're walking yeah. right
and
in front.
Behind what, the scenes, yeah, what's so, take one, it hit yeah. me. The first time it hit me. The banner literally hit me. We timed it wrong, yeah.
What I loved about that was like, it wouldn't be as funny if you just were standing there and it fell obscuring you. It was the fact that you were entering, the moment, you were walking towards them to join and were immediately cut off. It was a great bit of physical comedy.
Yeah, and then Jerry, after all these wonderful things that people have said, he goes, you didn't tell me we were doing this. I didn't come up with anything. It's just like, wah, wah.
What I loved, I watched the scene a few times because what really cracked me up, Jim, is you keep playing that feeling. In the background, you see your face is just still kind of like befuddled. You're like, I wish I could have done it.
Something, come up with something. Yeah. But I think, Greg, we can agree, and Jason, you'll probably jump in on this, I'm the greatest actor you've ever seen. Can we go with that? Is this
something? You're definitely the most humble.
I hesitated to say this earlier, but so much of Dennis Feinstein came out of just watching you work.
I get it. Jim, I get
just,
it.
Just really,
yeah. dude. We're
watching
on the
you
same
work
page.
And be like,
I would see you staring at me.
Behind the scenes, yes. Behind the scenes, you're a villain. You are.
I am
behind the
asshole.
Scenes. You are Dennis Feinstein. I heard they based the Dennis Feinstein character on you, Jim.
There's talk of that. Sure. The Jerry at the end. Such a great moment.
Well, you know. We talk a lot about who our episode MVP is, our most valuable punny, and it feels wrong. For me, it feels wrong not to say Dennis Feinstein.
Of course.
When you have
the great.
Oh, yes. But I don't agree. Not in this episode.
I would give
up there.
I would say two things. One, I would put you as a most valuable Pawnean in this case because
I'll take it.
You are one of our biggest Pawnee personalities that we get in this one. We get so much about you. But I want to give that scene, the scene you have with Adam, the two of you together. I think Adam, in an episode where, this is a special and unique episode, where it's kind of like our series premiere we were talking about with I'm Leslie Knope, in that Leslie's story is kind of waiting for a moment, right? She doesn't have a strong gay story. And so Ben's search for a job, the Parks Department making these gifts for her, even the PCP storyline, which doesn't even start to the act one break, that tells you it's not as vital to the storyline. She's waiting for the news to drop about her campaign being pretty much shuttered by the think tank, and then everyone coming in saying, we're going to help run your campaign, which launches us to the rest of the season. So it's not a very big Leslie A story, although Leslie is such a driving force for everyone else in this storyline. And that's why, for me, long-winded way of saying, that scene that you have with Adam is so fun and so killer and creates this whole other dynamic to Dennis Feinstein that, for me, that's my MVP.
Wow. That was a lot.
That was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah. I appreciate it. And I love that scene. Because one of the things while watching it, I was like, oh, right. This period where everything kind of gets thrown into chaos, you know, like the show's kind of structure gets thrown into chaos. Suddenly they are out of their jobs and they're having to, and what's fun about the episode and my part in it, it is fun to watch Adam have to go like Goldilocks to all these different places, trying to find being out of place, feeling like he's disgraced, and trying to pick up the pieces. Very fun. It's not just like continuing to go to the office, here, same old storylines. It's like, no, we've broken it up now. Now we've broken the toy, but we still have to play with it. And that's great. And I loved that scene because you're getting Ben Wyatt at a low point. And so for Dennis Feinstein to be, I like when they have just met and Dennis Feinstein says, I like you, Ben. I've always liked you. It's like, we just saw them meet 7 seconds ago. What's happening?
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Do you want to go to the town hall? I think you do.
Well, you know, we have Jason here. We have one of my favorite things that we do on the show, a town hall. We got a question from one of our listeners. We always like to set it in a place in Pawnee. It feels like we've talked about it so much, setting it in Dennis Feinstein's office. Yeah. The odorous office.
Oh, imagine the stink in that office. Yeah,
not talking about body, I'm talking about perfumer.
Perfume, yes.
Sitting in Dennis Feinstein's office feels right. And this one comes to us from Amanda, who says, "Hi, Parks team. I have a very deep and thoughtful question. If you had to name a Dennis Feinstein fragrance, what would you name it?" Wow.
Oh,
wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Okay. I mean, there's some really good ones. And I will say, there's the episode that we were talking about earlier, and I'll come back and talk about it, where Dennis Feinstein, when they're going to go to the cigar bar and he tells everybody to scent up, and then they just start going through all the different scent names and what they are. We did that run for a long time, just inventing more and more crazy Dennis Feinstein names. And there's, I think, at some point, there was an outtake reel or a blooper of just those terrible bits, those terrible perfumes from that episode. I think it's on YouTube or something. Somebody found it. I feel like I'm going to pitch one that I believe, I'm saying this because I think Dennis Feinstein would make this. And it would be called like necrophilia. Mm. But it's feel, yeah. So it's it's kind of grabby and sexy, but the odor is definitely decaying human flesh.
I was thinking of something like calling it NASA, and it's it would say something like, you know, it's a warning from NASA where you know you're working with powerful stuff. Like this has come with a scientific warning that you actually shouldn't use this for the sake of the planet.
I can't top any of those.
There's a great Seinfeld storyline where Kramer comes up with the idea for a cologne where it smells like you just came from the ocean, right?
Yes.
This great idea, and he forces Jerry to smell his arm, right? And he says, what does it smell like? And it's the beach. He calls it the beach. And then there's a B-side of that where another episode where that idea was pitched, I think, Calvin Klein, which steals the idea from him. But I was thinking about that just now, like this, the smells that Dennis Feinstein would think are powerful. It's also the way that Dennis would sell it, right? So I was thinking, what if there was one called Sweat, which is like, you know, when you bring someone back to your house, you want it to smell like you've been at the gym all day. Well,
yeah,
right. It just smells like just a sweaty body.
Or I feel like he would come up with one called Jacked, and it's how you smell like when you're in like really good shape, like when you're really
Damn. Oh my God.
Let's pretend I came up with that one. Can we say that?
Why don't you just say like Jacked?
Jacked.
That's not
so
bad.
So it smells like you're jacked up.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Well, let's move on.
Well, for our listeners, if you feel like you can top that, I know it's gonna be tough to top Jim's, but if you feel like you can top that, leave your ideas in the comments. And you know what? Speaking of which, leave us some reviews. Give us some 5-star reviews.
Tell us what you think.
Wherever you're finding us, wherever you're listening, let us know what you're thinking. We always like to hear from you. And we incorporate those thoughts into our episodes. We want to deliver the podcast that you love about the show you love.
If you hate us, go to hell. We don't care. Yeah.
Jim won't litigate. That's not his way.
It's not. I am not litigious.
And if you hate the show, leave a 5-star review and then write a scathing, hate-filled review in the body of the text.
Give it five stars. That's a hot tip.
That's a hot tip.
And so I think it's and also subscribe and hate.
We like all the above.
Well, thank you, not just for those listening, but thank you, Jason, for joining us today, talking about this episode, but just talking about Parks and Rec and your time on the show. It's been just, I can only speak for Jim, an absolute joy to chat with you about this.
I have loved every second. I am a huge fan. I see you in all sorts of things. And again, I told you, every time I turn, I'm hearing about Jason.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you. I had a great time. I was honored to be asked. I'm thrilled to talk about, you know, one of my favorite characters on one of my favorite shows. Yay. You know, I'm so grateful to have been a part of a show that I think is so terrific and so good and so funny and so sweet. Like we were talking about, here's a show that is wall-to-wall funny this whole episode, and then at the very end, so heartfelt and tender and kind and loving in a way that doesn't rob any of the jokes, doesn't step on any of the humor, but is so sincere and heartwarming that you really are invested in this world so much more so than most other half-hour, you know, comedies. And that's what I loved just even getting today to watch this episode, having watched the show, of course, before and being a part of the show. And then also, I can't tell you, I'm sure, Jim, you know this, you know, way more than I do. I can't tell you how many people want to talk to me about Dennis Feinstein and Parks and Rec. It is beloved in a way that I don't know if any of you know. It is for me a incredibly side tertiary character. People still are obsessed with Dennis Feinstein and obsessed with Parks. Even now, this many years later, it makes me so delighted and so happy whenever people recognize me from this show. It's great.
Well, let's.
That was lovely. How lovely. Do we do it? We can't do anything more than that.
You
my
can't,
God.
You can't top that. You can't top this guy. Jason, thank you. And from all of us here, goodbye from Pawnee.
Goodbye from Pawnee. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
This has been a Team Coco production.